My name's Kevin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kevin.
This is awesome. That music's going to throw me off, but I'm sure I'll get in a groove here in a second. I'm really honored about getting the opportunity to speak at ASCII Pod. I love talking on panels, and I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. Nikki and I were talking yesterday about, like, what exactly do we speak on, or earlier today or something like that, about what that really means. And I don't know, but I want to talk a little bit about, like, just what it's like to stay sober through some really, really difficult things. And so I guess to start, my sobriety date is December the 25th, 2003. I have had the opportunity to be on the host committee for this ASCII Pod, which is like just an awesome experience. And it really saved my ass over the last year of my recovery. And I'll try to do it chronologically, but I'm sure it won't be linear. I kind of tend to bounce around a little bit. But so, you know, like, getting sober is one thing, and it's a really, really difficult deal, grasping this stuff. I still, to this day, I look back sometimes at just, like, how young I was and how self-centered I was and how sick I was, and I'm like, how the hell did I hang on through some of those times? And there's no other way to really look at it than really just God's grace. You know, I was so blessed at a young age to be put around some really, really strong guys in recovery and to have a safety net or an A team or whatever it is that you want to call it. And I think knowing what that looked like then has saved my ass so many times, throughout my recovery. You know, like, getting sober is really, really difficult, but staying sober is even harder. And I think that's one of the things that I will forget about a lot, is that this is a progressive illness. And that doesn't just mean, like, if I go back out drinking, that it's progressive. It means that, like, I get sicker and sicker whether I'm sober or whether I'm out. You know, I am crazier today than I was when I walked through the doors here. Now, working a program, I'm not, like, necessarily as insane every single day, but, like, the potential for insanity is much greater today than it was when I showed up here, because this deal is progressive. And if I don't continue to perfect and enlarge my spiritual life, that, like, my disease will grow larger and larger and larger as this deal goes on. And if my program doesn't go with it, then I don't stand much of a chance. And I've had some really close calls in my recovery. I don't know how I stayed sober through them sometimes. But I got to attribute that to God's grace. And I've been very, very blessed. God has always put the exact right person in my life at the exact right time to teach me something, or to show me something, or to save my ass, or to point something out to me that I could not see in myself. And that is just an amazing deal. So, you know, I really like the quote that Chris used tonight. Is my favorite by far in the big book, where it talks about enlarging spirit, you know, perfect and enlarge your spiritual life, or an alcoholic will not survive the certain trials and low spots which lie ahead. And those certain trials and low spots have absolutely been a part of my recovery. And the thing is like, if I don't work a program every day to the best of my abilities, I don't know when those certain trials and low spots, I don't know when that insanity is going to trigger again. You know what I'm saying? I don't know when the insanity to pick up that drink or to go out and do that crazy thing or whatever it is. I don't know when that's going to happen. But I've been sober long enough to know that it's going to happen again. You know, I've gotten some time sober. See, that's what happens. The last couple years really began with, you know, I probably had like 6 or 7 years of sobriety, and I had this really good-looking life all around me. You know, from outside perspective, everything was great. I had the girlfriend. I had a job. I had a car. All these people thought I was the shit. I had service commitments. I had the thing. Everywhere I went, oh, it's KO. So cool. Yeah. Whatever. And that is what my life really became. And things get really, really good. And what starts to happen to an alcoholic like me, the way that my defects of character talk to me, is I start to look at my life and I start to say things like, wow, look at what I've done. Look at everything I've accomplished. Look at how great I am. I've done such a kick-ass job at making all this stuff happen. And there is some truth. A very small percentage of that is my responsibility. I took action. I did what I needed to do. But by far, over and over again, it's because God put the right person in my life to give give me an amazing opportunity to own a car or to learn what it's like to date somebody and to really treat them right, or to learn how to hold a job and not steal from your company, or, you know, how to like make real friendships with people and keep them and hold each other accountable. Those are the pieces that I began to lose sight of. And most of the pain that I put myself through, especially in the last couple of years, has been self-inflicted. I mean, most of the pain that I put myself through in my sobriety has been self-inflicted. It's been as a direct result of not working the steps. It's been a result of putting things that aren't the priorities in my life and making them priorities. And it happens so subtly. So, you know, having 7 years of sobriety, there's a piece of like, I felt like I was bulletproof. I don't need anybody's help anymore. I have all the answers. Anybody can come to me at any time and I will sit with you and we'll talk, man. I'll show you where it's at in the big book. We'll talk about prayer. We'll talk about God. We'll talk about how important all those things are. But when it comes to me, I'm doing great. You know, I'm doing great. Everything's awesome. Thanks for asking, man, but I'm perfect. Everything's great. My life's, you know, I'm good all the time. And I begin to tell that lie so much that, turned down for what? Playing next door. I knew it would be distracting, but, I wonder if it'll pick it up on that. But, so, you know, I begin to believe my own lies so much that I really do feel like that I don't need anybody's help anymore. You know, that I can say, if anybody came to me, oh, of course, God, super cool, I need him. Oh, of course, he's there. I can quote you 9 things in the big book that talk about God. But the reality is I'm not taking the actions on a day-to-day basis that allow me to enlarge and perfect my spiritual life, which is how I stay sober through, you know, like, through really, really difficult times. Like, that's the deal. It's not, you know, it's like, I can know I need God all day long, but unless I'm willing to take the actions, it doesn't do me a whole lot of good. I can know I need to go to meetings. I can know that I'm crazy. I can know that calling my sponsor right now would be a really great idea, but unless I'm willing to take those actions, it doesn't do a whole lot for my recovery. It doesn't enlarge my spiritual life. And when those certain trials and low spots come, or when that insanity returns, if I don't have that spiritual defense, like, you know, I'm not going to stand a chance. And then that's probably the biggest lesson that I've learned through going through rough times in my recovery, is that like, I'm not getting better at managing my life. Like, that's never the case. And I will like lose sight of that sometimes. I think that somewhere in there, I want to believe that if I work this program really, really hard and I get enough time sober and I'm a long timer and people think I'm cool or whatever it is, that I'm going to somehow, some way, like, regain my right to take the power back in my life. And that's just never going to happen. That's not the case. That's nowhere in the big book. It's never happened in my recovery. I have fallen under that delusion many times that now that I've got such and such, or now that I've got this amount of money, or now that I've got this thing, that means I get to call the shots in my life. And I don't. And all that ever does is just set me up for heartache. You know, I set myself up with this false sense of security and this false sense of pride in my life, and then something will happen when I really need God, where the ego and the money and the friends and the people thinking I'm cool is never enough to get me through whatever trial and low spots which lie ahead. And if I didn't have the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, if I didn't have the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, if I didn't have sponsees, if I didn't have service commitments, then there's no way that I would have made it. And so I've had some self-inflicted things. You know, I went through a really, really difficult breakup, probably about a year and a half ago. You know, me and this girl were, we were engaged, we were getting married, and we were the perfect AA couple, and everything from outside perspective looks really good, and it was awesome. And of course it was a done deal. And it was, you know, in my mind, it was like, this is for sure going to happen, and I'm super happy, and it's exactly what I want. And I know what I want, and obviously God knows what I want. So obviously, of course, it's going to work out exactly the way that I see it in my mind, and which is like never happened ever in my recovery. You know, and you know, she came to me one day and she's like, you know, I think that you're great, but I just can't do this. I'm just not ready. You know, my life has taken a different direction. And she had an internal thing with her and God and her, you know, spiritual path. And it was devastating. You know, it was the toughest thing, that I've ever gone through in my recovery. And, you know, the good thing is, had I not gone through what I'd gone through with 7 years of sobriety and realized how full of shit I was and how egoed out I was and how much I hadn't, you know, I spent that whole year relearning how to build a relationship with God. And that's something that I hope that I get to stay sober long enough to totally forget about God again and rebuild a relationship with Him again, you know, 'cause it's gonna happen. I'm a self-centered, egotistical alcoholic, and I don't want to give God credit, and if I stay sober long enough, chances are I'm going to get that fucked up again, you know, and it's recorded, but chances are I'm going to get that crazy again, and you know, but if I hadn't gone through what I had gone through at 7 years of sobriety and learned again what humility meant and what real friendships mean, and that money and power and prestige and things and deals and girls or whatever is not what my recovery is based on, and it's not why people love me, it's not why people care about me, it's not why people get excited when I show up to a meeting, you know what I'm saying? It's because they truly care about me and they want me to stay sober, and I had to relearn those things and really take those actions again. And had I not gone through that, you know, I don't think I would have survived that. I really, really don't. You know, I had just recently picked up some sponsees, like literally the week before it happened. We broke up, it shattered my world, and this guy calls me literally the next day, and he's like, Kevin, you played on our sober softball team like a year ago. I haven't talked to you in a while, man. I was wondering if you'd want to come play sober. It's like me and like nine other guys that are in the program, and we're like all getting together, just a bunch of dudes, and we're going to play softball. Would you like to join us? And it was like, I mean, again, just God putting the right people and places and things in my life at any given time. These sponsees were the most needy, like wanting to meet up all the time, go to meetings with me, you know, but it saved my fucking ass. And I would not be here today if it wasn't for those group of guys, and they aren't able to be at ASCII Pop, but, I mean, they really did. And we started to do, we'd have Spaghetti Monday and, you know, some Taco Tuesday and Seven Step Thursday. And we started making up all this different, but it saved my ass. And it was like back to basics, and these guys were just hungry, and they call me all the time, and I mean, like, it really did. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous, what it says to do, and I didn't feel real good. It hurt like hell to wake up. It hurt like hell to go to sleep. It hurt like hell to take a shower. It hurt like hell to brush my teeth. I mean, anybody's gone through something devastating in your recovery, like, working a program doesn't mean that you're going to really like what's happened, or you're going to feel real good, you know, like... from the window to the wall.
Oh my God.
But, you know, it doesn't guarantee that I'm going to feel real good. What it guarantees is that no matter what happens in my life, I don't have to pick up that next drink, and that I will walk through it with dignity and grace. And I got to do that. You know, I got to continue to show up to work. I got to show up to those guys. I had people call, you know, and I had begun to get self-centered with some stuff again. I had people from halfway across Phoenix that used to call me and say, Kevin, you know, we'd really love to have you come speak on the West Side. And I'd say, you know, man, I'm just too, you know, I've got this thing going on, or I would love to be there, but, and it was bullshit. You know, I just didn't want to do it. I didn't want to go the extra mile for my recovery. But I, you know, when those things started to come up and I realized how much I needed those things, how much I needed the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and how much bigger it is than I am, you know, that like if I were to leave today, this whole thing would function just fine without me. You know, it really would. It would be just fine without me. Alcoholics Anonymous does not need me to run. But if I am so grateful to get to participate in Alcoholics Anonymous on whatever level it is. So because of that, I always check myself anytime somebody picks up the phone and it's something that's inconvenient or something that I don't want to do, you know, or a talk or a thing. And it's like, I'd rather be watching Monday Night Football or whatever it is. And, you know, I remember that and I go, you know, there will be a time again that I'm going to need somebody to pick up the phone and ask me for that service commitment, or I'm going to need that sponsee to call me when I'm in the middle of a crisis, or I'm going to need, you know, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to be there so that I can stay sober one day at a time, because I know it's coming. I don't know when, I don't know how, I don't know what area of my life is going to blow up in my face, but I've been around long enough to know that at some point it's going to. You know, that is just the deal. And I'm going to do the best I can to try to prepare. And I'm going to do the best I can to try to never make sure anything like that happens. But again, it's another one of those things I just realized, like, you know, there isn't a whole lot of stock in sitting around trying to think about how to not make my life suck. Because if anything, I just end up making it suck. So, that was, you know, such a valuable lesson. And then again, like, moving to Prescott this year, you know, after going through that breakup and, you know, my life kind of coming back to some balance, and, I was kind of lost. I thought about, you know, what am I going to do with my career? What direction is my life going? What's my next purpose? I had done some different things, and I had this amazing opportunity to come up to Prescott for this job promotion. And, you know, the alcoholic in me initially was like, yes, that would be awesome. You know, next thing, of course, the first thing that comes up, and I was like, you know what? Like, I'm going to take my time and really make sure this is what I want to do. And I had a really solid group of people around me. And so, you know, I was getting back to doing the things that worked for me. The things I did in my first 30 days that my sponsor taught me to pause when agitated, to pray, to reach out and talk about something before I make an action, to, you know, to be of service, to do the little things, that there's no service commitment that's bigger or smaller than me. And if, when anyone anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of Alcoholics Anonymous to be there. And for that, I am responsible. And I'm not perfect at it, but I try to take that responsibility as serious as possible today. It's very, very important that I may get the chance to stay sober and hopefully carry the message to somebody else. And you know, when I had the opportunity to move to Prescott, I was scared to death. I lived in Phoenix for like 6 or 7 years. My entire A team service commitments, people knew me. I was this, you know, like I don't know, like when I would go to meetings, that people knew me, whatever, you know, like it was awesome. I was well connected. I had a lot of fun. I was really involved. I had this huge sense of security. My recovery was really solid. I had gone through all this stuff, and there's all these people that had seen me go through hellish stuff and come out on the other end, staying sober through it. And then it was, you know, I had to move to Prescott, I got the opportunity to move to Prescott, and I had to start all the way over again. And it was like being a newcomer again. And, you know, I went to 2 meetings a day when I moved here, and I would just raise my hand and say, I'm new to town and I'm scared to death and I don't really know anybody, but I'll be glad to help or talk to anybody that wants to hang out. And again, it was back to basics. And I really hope that I never lose sight of how important that is. I hope I never outgrow the rank of member in Alcoholics Anonymous, because anytime I start to get that I'm above it, or I'm better than, or I don't need to do that anymore, I'm headed down a really, really rough path, and I'm gonna, like, you know, cause some serious pain and suffering for myself in the long run. And this commitment for being on ASCII-PAW really did save my ass. I mean, ASCII-PAW, like, came to town. ASCII-PAW was in Phoenix like a month after I moved there, and then Prescott won the bid, and I immediately knew that I wanted to get involved. And I hated young people's when I, like, the first 8 years of this party, I hated young people's AA. You know, I just don't feel that way anymore. It's like, and I've had an opportunity. It's really saved my ass, and I've got to meet a lot of really strong people in recovery, and I've got to have a lot of fun and do a lot of different events. And those are the things that I really look forward to today. I mean, my recovery is so much more a priority to me today than it even was a year ago, or 2 or 5 or 6, or you know, all the way back to the beginning. It has to be. My recovery, you know, like, it has to continue to grow in importance in my life. It has to be the most important thing in my life, or everything else will suck anyway, you know. And I've seen a lot of my friends go back out, you know, with 4 and 6 and 8 and 10 years of sobriety, and it's not fun and it's not pretty. And I don't want that to be me, you know. And if that means, you know, taking something that I want to do and pushing it off to go be a service to somebody else, or, you know, picking up that phone when I don't want to, or when I'm exhausted from work, going straight from work to meet with a sponsee, to hear a fifth step, to do, you know, like, that's, I've been so blessed for that to be in the forefront of my mind, especially over this last year, because I've needed to work a program in order to save my ass. You know, there's times that I've gotten away and I've been very lucky by not working a program. And like I said, I get really egoed out and this and that and the other. But relearning the importance of, I know that there will be a time that I have to work these steps on a day-to-day basis in order to stay sober. And sometimes it feels like I'm hanging on by a thread. But that thread is all I need. And if that's the hope that I have, and if that's what the fellowship looks like at that time, then I'm going to hold on as tight as I can, because it's gotten me through some really, really rough times in my recovery. So I think that's about it. That's all I got. The next speaker on the panel is Nikki. So I'll let her introduce herself. Thank you guys so much.
My name's Nikki. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Nikki.
My sobriety date is 4/12/2002. I got sober when I was 20 years old. I distinctively was just remembering the day that my parents had done an intervention a couple months before I actually called them for help. And when I called my mom, I just remember she was like, "Where are you?" Like, just frantic, like, "I'm gonna come get you." And she picked me up. And I'm really grateful that my parents educated themselves on the solution to my problems, because I had no idea what the solution was going to be. And basically my parents were like, "You're going to rehab. We're going to drop you off at the next corner. or you can join the Army. And I was like, well, the Army isn't going to do shit for me, right? And so I was like, all right, I'm going to go to rehab. And so for me, I had definitely hit a bottom. Like, I always use the metaphor of, like, God had a game of life, and it was my life, and he just kept picking up things. And I was homeless, and I pawned my car, and, you know, just all these things. Like, he was just picking up things. Like, okay, is she gonna hit her bottom yet? No. Okay, is she gonna hit her bottom yet? No. And that's totally how I saw my life unfolding, you know, before me. And I was finally done. And when I went to rehab, I was just like, Chris, the speaker, I was the youngest one by far. And I cried for like the first 15 days. I was like, this sucks. Like, I don't know what I'm gonna do with my life. I'm young, I have nothing. And luckily, after I got sober in Colorado, they decided that I needed some additional help. And I got sent out here to Prescott, to Pia's place. And that's where I just kinda got, you know, 3 months of more foundation and really got entwined with the community here. And thank God I did, because I know probably if I would have stayed in Colorado, I would have gone right back to my old friends. The first thing I did when I got out of my 20-day program was delete all the numbers out of it, because I didn't want to live that life anymore. So for me, I don't have a perfect story. I don't think any of us do, but I pretty much fucked up my first 2 years of sobriety. The only thing that I did right was go to meetings and get involved with ASCPA. I didn't work any steps. I did not have a sponsor. I had a sponsor. Yeah, I have a sponsor. I literally was gonna drive my car off a cliff, because I knew if I relapsed, it would break my mom's heart. And I knew if I killed myself, it would break my mom's heart. But if I got in a car accident, it was just an accident. And luckily I was meeting some women for dinner, and I got there and I was crying and I was like, I can't fucking live like this. I'm gonna kill myself. Like, what the fuck's going on? And they're like, what are you doing? Are you working the steps? Do you have a sponsor? Like, what are you doing? And I'm like, no. And they literally picked up the phone, called their sponsor, and this is a woman I hadn't even met, and I was just crying on the phone. She's like, show up at my house tomorrow with your big book. And from that point forward is when my life completely changed. Like, this woman that I didn't even know, worked the steps with me. I did, like, to get my fourth and fifth step done, because I needed to get that shit out or I was gonna end up drinking or killing myself. We just did like a little bit of four, a little bit of five, a little bit of four, a little bit of five. And I had to get through those steps because I had never been through the steps before. And that's the part that actually gets us to change our lives and how we think about ourselves and others. And, you know, thank God that I had the desire, not the desire to drink or use, lifted from me very early on. And that was because I do believe that God was watching over me. Chris spoke about how he heard a voice. I literally wrote a letter to God stating that I don't know what I'm doing with my life. I think I have a problem, but I'm not sure. I need your help. And then of course at the end of the letter I was like, P.S. but not now. In like 30 days would be great. And it literally was 30 days, because my mom brought me all my shit, and it literally was 30 days from when I'd written that letter that I ended up in rehab. So for me, that connection, that aha moment, that spiritual thing that I needed, I got that early, and it's a good thing I did, because I probably wouldn't be sitting here if I hadn't. And so through working the steps, of course, I got a much, you know, better connection with my higher power. I went to bars, I hung out with people, we went dancing and Prescott on whiskey. I mean, I did everything wrong. I hung out with my friends that were relapsing, but I was the sober girl. Like, I was enabling that behavior, but I was sober. Like, that's the wrong fucking shit to do. Like, you're not supposed to do that. And it wasn't until this round of working the steps at 12 years sober that I was able to actually see my part in that and make amends to those people that I was enabling their behavior. And that happened like 8 or 10 years ago. And so basically through ASCPA is a huge part of my story. I've been in ASCPA since I was a year sober. I was on the host committee in 2006. I was on advisory for 5 years. And then we moved, my husband and I moved away. We moved to Washington State, a couple places in between that, but we don't need to go there. And I ended up, I had twins. I am a mom of three. And, those were probably the hardest 2 years of my life. We lived in Washington State. I didn't know anybody. And again, I had no program. I wasn't going to meetings. I definitely didn't have a sponsor. I had no sober friends where we were. And again, it was by the grace of God that I didn't drink. And I think that I definitely replaced my, like I became a workaholic. I worked 50 hours a week, 60 hours a week, whatever. I just had to get something to get out of myself. And I wasn't finding the solution in AA where I knew it was. So when my husband had the opportunity to move back to Prescott to open a business, it was a no-brainer for me. Like, I was miserable. And I knew that if I got back to Prescott, I'd be able to get my old sponsor back. I knew where meetings were. I knew, you know, things were happening. And I didn't hesitate. I was like, yes, of course I want to move back. And that's exactly what I did. Like, I have not lived in Prescott for 5 years. We moved back last June. I didn't know anybody really in this town, a few people here and there, but I knew that Prescott had gotten the ASCII PAW host, and I showed up at the host meeting not knowing like three or four people, scared shitless, you know, 11 years sober, and I just stood up because I knew that I needed to get involved somehow. And I ended up getting voted as a secretary this year for the host committee, and that was pretty powerful for me because I know the solutions that work in my life, but I have to be able to use them. So I know ASCII PAW kept me sober, being around a bunch of young people. I know that having my sponsor and working the steps actively keeps me sober. I know going to meetings keeps me sober. I know having sponsees keeps me sober. Like, I know all these things that keep me sober, and I have to do it to have a life that is worth living. Those 2 years in Washington, I was freaking miserable. Yeah, I didn't drink, but I was feeling very depressed, and my mind goes places that it shouldn't go when I'm not actively working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know that. I've had the proof when I had 2 years sober, and I've had the proof when I've had 11 years sober. Like, my brain, if I'm not actively working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, does not function correctly. And this go round with my sponsor, it's been pretty cool. We just decided to go like out of the 12 and 12, and everyone's like, oh, I only work the steps out of the big book. Well, you know what? The 12 and 12 is a really great book. So if you haven't read it, I suggest you do. It dives deeper into things like humility and stuff like that. Like, I'm sober for a while and I know all these things, but like rereading it and like really diving deep into like all these different things regarding the step. I mean, it's just very powerful for me. And, like the seven deadly sins, like I've never worked the steps around the seven deadly sins, and we did that, and I was just like, holy shit, like this is intense. Like, there's so many things, just, you know, peeling that layer of onion like over and over again. And I know for myself that I'm always constantly gonna have to be working towards something. I cannot stay stagnant. I know that. I'm not a good wife. I'm not a good mother. I'm not a good friend. And I have to do all of that to stay sober. So for me today, I have to even balance. I'm a mom of three. I'm a wife. You know, a gentleman told me that you have to find the evenness. Like, you can't be going to a meeting every night and neglecting your family, but you can't, you know, be all with your family and not work your program. And your husband's sober, so how is he going to do his thing and your thing and work and all this? And it's just like, it's tough. It's life on life's terms, and that's what happens when you get older. You know, I'm 32 years old. I have a full-time job. You know, I have three kids. I have to go to meetings. I have to meet with my sponsor. I have to meet with my sponsees, and that's what works for me. Because the reality is, just like what Chris said, if I don't do all that stuff, it won't matter because I won't have all that stuff. Like, my husband will leave me. My kids won't want to be around me. I will definitely lose my job because I will not show up. And so it's just finding that even keel. And I am feeling very serene. Like, I love ASCII PAW, obviously. But it is a lot of excitement. But in my life today, like, I feel really serene. Like, I'm not on one end or the other. I'm not, like, extremely manic, and I'm not depressed. I'm just really, like, in a good spot with myself. And that's taken quite a while to get to. And again, I have to bring it back to working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I know for me that that is where the solution is. When I get a sponsee, it's like, we don't fuck around. We don't sit on the second step for 3 months like some people I've heard. It's like, are you kidding me? How are you going to stay sober if you're sitting on a step for that long? Like, you got to work through the steps, and you got to do your inventory. And you got to have a connection with a higher power. I mean, that is, I was 3 years sober, maybe 3.5 years sober, going to all these bars with these people. And literally there was a drink at the bar, and it was the drink, God, and me. And I know for a fact that it was the God of my understanding that works in my life that kept me from taking that drink. It was the God of my life that kept me from driving my car off that cliff and going and meeting my girlfriends. You know, everything that happens in my life, I can accredit to my connection with my higher power. My higher power isn't, I call him God because that's just what the universal word is. Mine is much bigger than that, and I'm not even going to get into it because it's so out there. But I do believe that there's something way powerful than myself that's watching over me and my family. So I think I'm going to stop. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks. And this is Reno from Vegas.
Rhino alcoholic?
Oh, Rhino. Sorry.
It's all right.
Reno from
Reno.
Reno.
Definitely not from Reno.
Sorry.
From Vegas.
Thanks.
Rhino alcoholic. Sober since February 4, 2002. For that, I'm extremely grateful. Very grateful to be here, and very honored to have been asked to come and share on this panel, and just heard some amazing stuff from our my co-panelists. And I'm not going to lie to you guys, man, I'm a little nervous, you know what I mean? Anytime I got to share part of my life in front of a group of drunks, man, I get a little nervous because I'm a pretty sensitive cat. And, you know, alcoholics are mean, man, you know? And I've heard of people standing in front of parole boards that were nicer than the audience in a speaker meeting, you know what I mean? And all my life I've been the guy who's always been, like, pretty scared of what people think of me, you know? And this is, like, a pretty sensitive topic in my life right now because of the changes that have been going on in the last few years of my life. And I appreciate what our other speakers have shared on, you know, and it's not easy to sit up here and tell the truth about how sobriety is not always awesome, you know, and especially when you think there might be new people in the room, and what you want is you want to come off as somebody who's extremely grateful 24/7, and my life is amazing, man. You should want what I have, and you should want the same things that I want, and it's not, you know, I'll be honest, it's not always like that, especially, you know, for me at least. And Here's what happened with me. I sobered up in 2002. I was 20 years old. I came off the streets, and I fell into a group of people in Escondido, California, which is the top of San Diego, where it was a very close-knit AA community. Everybody treated each other like family. Everybody knew everybody's business, but not in a bad way, if that makes sense, you know? We all just were concerned for each other, and everybody knew what was going on with everybody. And I was in a meeting every... Jesus Christ, they're partying over there. And some of those songs I could not sit still through. And so I landed in a town where everybody was super busy in AA, and I just followed suit, you know, and I got sober, and I had amazing sobriety for the first, I want to say, four and a half years, you know, and my sponsor, who I had him start sponsoring me, I think I was about 60 days sober when I got a sponsor and started taking the steps, and the guy became like a father to me, and he kept my nose in the book, and he kept pen to paper with me, and I actually wrote out all of my steps, every 1 through 12. Every single one had to be written, and we went over it, and I believe that I had very strong sponsorship, and as a result of that, my life grew to a great place by leaps and bounds, you know? And I went from having no job to a job to a better job to a better job, better job in like no time, no car, to having my truck back that I had that I lost when I was loaded, and you know, things got really good for me, and all the dreams that I had in early sobriety started coming true. And it didn't take very long, you know. And I dropped out of high school at 15, and seventh and eighth grade, I didn't really go, you know what I mean? So I probably honestly have about a sixth grade education. I was painting houses, and I had dreams of becoming a heavy equipment operator, a crane operator, and getting into the operating engineers union. And one of the first things that I had to do was I had to go get my GED, and I was terrified, and my men's group walked me through that, and I did that. And you know, all these things started falling into place, and I picked up from Escondido, and I moved back to Vegas, where I grew up and where I had been loaded most of my life, you know. And I moved back there with almost 5 years sober for a career change, and it was to go back there and pursue a new career. And I completely uprooted myself from everything that I was comfortable with, and I went out there, you know, I was sponsoring guys, and I was in meetings, you know, 6-7 days a week in Escondido. And I went out there, and that was the first big drastic change in my life and my sobriety, you know. And I had, ever since then, I've told people, you know, if you think you got your shit together in AA, then pick up and move to another state, you know, and then you'll really know what you're made of. You'll know how close you are with God, and you'll know how comfortable you are walking in, you know, with years of sobriety and being a newcomer somewhere, you know, being a complete stranger, having no network and no fellowship there. And I did that, and you know, and I got plugged in pretty quick, and things started happening that were good. And fast forward a couple years later, I was into the apprenticeship for my career, which is what I wanted. It was like a huge accomplishment, big dream. I'm an apprentice operator, and I met her, and we became like, just like this gentleman was saying, like the AA couple. We were at every party, every barbecue together, and you know, I was thinking about wedding rings, like I was shopping for engagement rings and stuff like that, and all of a sudden it all came crashing down. And I was shattered, you know. And like I mentioned before, I'm a sensitive person, and I was knee deep in that relationship, and I had let myself come to a place where I was two-stepping really bad, where I, you know, I had some sponsees that I could sit down and tell them what their problem was, and I knew that I was powerless over alcohol and I didn't want to drink, but I wasn't knee deep in the steps myself, you know. And I become kind of disconnected, and when that relationship ended, it ended horribly. And you know, at the time, this is what happened. You know, I felt differently about it at the time, but since then, and a couple trips through the steps since then, like I've realized some things. She started to do what single people do, and she started to, you know, date around and stuff like that, and it was within the fellowship, and I was incredibly uncomfortable, and I was so shattered from the breakup that I withdrew myself almost completely from Alcoholics Anonymous. I became a workaholic, and in my trade, it's not uncommon to work 60, 70, 80 hours a week, and I became very, very proud of my work, and that was like my main focus in life. Was I wanted to work on my certifications, and I was all about financial success and everything like that at the time. And because I felt like I had no fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous that I could trust in with the young peoples, I withdrew, and most of my people that I hung out with and surrounded myself with were either construction workers or people from the punk scene in Vegas, because I was big into the punk scene and going to hardcore shows. And when I don't hang out with sober people, I hang out with people outside of AA. I hang out with construction workers or punkers, you know what I mean? I act like a construction worker and a punker, and I don't act like a sober alcoholic. I don't act like somebody who's living with spiritual principles, you know? So I'm going to, you know, I'm 7 years sober. No, let's see. I'm 7-8 years sober, and I'm going to hardcore shows and getting into fights like on a regular basis, and I'm not really going to meetings, and I'm cashing big paychecks and feeling like, you know, a lot of ego about that, and completely running my own life with no God in it, and you know, womanizing and lying to people and just acting really, really not well, you know. And I was still trying to find a way to hold on to AA the best I could, so I got involved again in doing some committee work, and this is when it all got like probably the worst that I've ever experienced in my sobriety. You know, I was dry as a bone. I was on a service committee in Vegas, and we hosted an event downtown, and I got into an argument with a couple of people from out of town, because we always have people come from out of town to our events, and a fist fight broke out. And I got into it, and I got popped a couple times in the face, and I fought back, and me and another person both had mutual combat battery charges pressed against us. And I was 7 years sober, I think, at the time. And so 7 years sober, I, in front of everybody on my committee and in front of 10,000 random people downtown, I got into a fight, you know, downtown, and had to talk to the cops and got a court date. And I felt so, I was still all torn up and not dealing with the things over her and I breaking up. And I felt like I had no friends, no, you know, and all these other people were upset with me. And I went home that night and I almost shot myself, you know, and it was one of the darkest moments of my life. And, I'd like to tell you that the next day, you know, I picked myself up on my bootstraps and I came back to AA and everything got way better, but it wasn't like that. It stayed nasty for a little bit, you know? And, eventually, during this time, I had had, one of my best friends, you know, probably my best friend on the planet. I've known him since kindergarten. You know, he had gotten sober in AA, a few years previous, which was like the biggest blessing I've ever gotten. You know, a childhood friend comes in, he says, man, I got a problem. He saw what I was doing. He comes in, he gets sober, and he puts together an amazing life. Well, around this time that I'm falling apart, he picks up and leaves AA. You know, and he tells me I'm leaving. I don't want to be sober anymore. And he went and got loaded. And when he did that, and I felt like he was my last friend, you know, that I could really count on in AA. When he did that, I wanted to drink. And it was the only, I can tell you, you know, I'm 12 years sober, and it was the only time I really wanted to drink in my entire sobriety. I sat in front of my house in my truck with the keys in the ignition ready to go and get some booze. And my phone rang, because it always rings, and a good friend of mine from San Diego was on the other end, and he said, what are you doing? And I knew that if I didn't tell him what exactly I was doing, that I was going to get drunk. And so I told him. And he suggested that, you know, why don't you take it back to basics, man? Why don't you go to a 90 and 90? Why don't you do that? And so by this time, I think I'm just shy of 9 years sober, you know? And so around that time, I went back and I did 90 meetings in 90 days. Actually, I did a lot more than 90 meetings in 90 days. And I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous again. I walked into a meeting. I think it took about 2 or 3 weeks before I could even hear the message. And the night that I heard the message, you know, there was a gentleman named Ed R. who was speaking, who is now my sponsor. And I got his number afterwards, and we got into the steps. And things started to change again. And, you know, a lot of things changed around the young people scene in Vegas at that time. And Vegas was actually awarded Wacky Paw. And so right as I was kind of just coming around again and opening up, and I was in the steps and I started feeling good, I got connected. I had some people ask me if I wanted to be of service. Actually, they kind of cornered me and said, man, you've been around for a long time, and I know that you have like some history with the committee and with, you know, this and that, but we would love for you to come back and be of service. And I it was very meaningful to me, so I did. And I got on the outreach committee for Wacky Paw, and I was in meetings every day, and then every weekend, me and two really good friends of mine would hop in my homie's busted ass little car, and we would go around to all these cities and go outreach our events as host committee for Wacky Paw. And it was probably one of the brightest spots in my life, you know. It was wonderful. And my career has taken some changes, you know. Back when the economy was like really strong in Vegas, there was so much work out there that, you know, there was never anything to worry about. And right now it's dried up. It dried up in 2009. And so at that same time, you know, right around that same time, I was out of work for quite a while, and I had to start traveling for work. And I'll tell you guys that I wind up in towns sometimes that don't have meetings. You know, I think the very first out of town call that I took was in June Lake, California. It's up by Mammoth, and it's literally in the busy season of summer, it's population 400. And I would work 12 hours, and I'd get off work, and I'd go. I actually found, I think it's either Inyo or Mono County, you know, central office that had a meeting schedule, and it said that they had a meeting in June Lake, which is where I was staying. This tiny, teeny tiny, it was like 5-6 buildings and then some houses. And I showed up to this meeting and nobody was there to unlock the door, you know? And so I'm living like that. I've gone like long stretches of time where I'm in places where there's not AA or it's not, you know, easy. And so I've learned to rely on God, and I've learned to pick up the phone, man, a lot, you know. And one of the biggest things that upsets me, you know, and it's been like that for the last, I want to say the last three, almost 4 years. I haven't worked in Las Vegas in 4 years, you know. And so that's what my life is like right now. But in the process, you know, I also have some amazing things happening. So in the process of being on host committee and everything like that, I met a young lady and we fell in love. And she's my wife. She's here in the room, you know. And so in the middle of... life is crazy, you know. I do the best I can dealing with what it throws at me, and I know that I want to be sober, and I know that I want to be an Alcoholics Anonymous. Sometimes things flow, and sometimes things go very well, and sometimes they don't, you know. I do the best I can. I pick up the phone, I call other alcoholics. You know, right now, it hurts me, but I can't full-time sponsor people. I can't. You know, right before we drove out here from Vegas, I was getting calls from my union halls in California. And it's like, I could be in Vegas on a Thursday afternoon at 3 o'clock and I'll get a call and be like, go to work in Riverside, you know, and be there by 6 a.m. the next day. And that's what I have to bounce around and do all that stuff to survive. You know, so I always tell guys that talk to me about sponsorship, like, look, man, I need for you to get another sponsor locally, somebody you can meet up and have coffee with and sit down with during the week and go through the book, and I'll be your friend, you know. Please call me with anything. And so I answer a lot of phone calls, and I talk to a lot of people that way, and I do the best that I can that way, you know. But I can't sponsor guys right now. I'm not in one place enough that I feel comfortable sponsoring a brand new person in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's been very painful, because some of the most rewarding things that I've ever done in AA is sit down and go through the steps with another alcoholic and hear somebody else's fifth step and be able to tell them, you know, the same things that I was told when I did my fifth step, you know. So it's a little scary. It's a little scary right now, because life is really up in the air for me and for my wife and I. And you know, she sometimes bounces around with me too, and she's sober in this program, and she does the same thing. She keeps in touch with her sponsor, and we do the best that we can wherever we're at. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not scared. I know that I want to be sober. I know that ever since I came back from that really dark spot that I was in, I don't wish to leave Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't wish to drink. And you know, when I'm in town in Vegas, we fellowship a lot with people. We got three wonderful friends that drove out here with us today. And you know, if you're new, I hope that you find the relationship with God that I have, because that's been like the mainstay for the last few years, and that's how my life has changed. You know, is that wherever I'm at, I'm not afraid. I know that I have God with me. I have a big book and a 12 and 12 in my truck, and I have a phone that I can always pick up 24 hours a day. You know, and it's been enough for me to stay sober. And you know, sometimes I do, like, I just came from a job. I was down in El Segundo working in an oil refinery, and I worked 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, you know, on night shifts, so 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. 7 days a week. And I'm not gonna lie to you, I dried out on that job, you know. I did not get off of work at 6 a.m. every day raring to go to a meeting. I went back to my motel room and ate shitty Chinese food and fell asleep, you know. And it was like that for almost 2 months. And I come back and I gotta shake that shit off and start hitting some meetings, you know. And that's what my life looks like sometimes. And on Monday, I just made plans with my sponsor to meet up and start the steps again. You know, this will probably be, I wanna say, my eighth or ninth time through the steps in my sobriety, you know, and I'm looking forward to it. I need it. I can feel it. I need it, you know. But right now I'm laid off and I'm at home, and I don't know when I'll go back to work, but while I'm home, I need to be busy. I need to get into the book, you know, because I want to stay here. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I have every single little thing I ever wanted, you know. I'm living all of those dreams, and sometimes they feel like nightmares, but at the end of the day, you know what I mean? I worked really hard to get where I'm at, and I'll take it, because at one point in time I was shoplifting my dinner on the streets, you know, and sleeping in a park with a backpack, and that was all I had. You know, I have a lot of quality problems, and if I stay connected and I stay honest, that's the biggest thing that I always tell myself whenever I'm going to share anything from a podium or speak in a meeting, is that no matter what, even if it's not pretty, I need to be honest with you. You know, I'm an alcoholic and I can get in really bad shape sometimes. And probably the only thing that I've done absolutely right over the last 12 years is I haven't picked up a drink. You know, sometimes I'm on fire, sometimes I'm not. Right now I love Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I want to be here. And I was actually really excited when I was asked to come and speak at this thing. A little nervous, you know what I mean, because like, that means I have to come in here and tell you that I haven't been as busy as a lot of people in this room in AA, you know what I mean? But I want to be, and I'm very grateful to be here. So with that, I'm done. Thanks.